He scopes out the present, shakes out the past, and keeps an eye out on the future. This is the Racing with Bruno podcast.
Hi, this is Bruno DiGiulio, Racing with Bruno with the Works, and welcome to our Handicapping Short Shorts. And I'm really excited about tonight's guest. She is phenomenal. As far as if you watched her on TV, she's almost infectious because she gets excited about certain horses that gets you excited. Andy Biancone. Andy, great to have you on our handicapping podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the kind words, Bruno, and thank you for having me. But getting right on to it. The Holy Bull, the Sam F. Davis. Obviously, just want to start by saying that this is the year of Paco Lopez. What a guy. He has been absolutely killing it at Gulfstream Park, and it's been pretty exciting to root him on. But starting with the Holy Bull, obviously Hades, gorgeous Florida bred. He is physically a really nice horse. I understand he was an OBS two-year-old purchase. Joe Orsino picked him out himself. Like I said, stunning horse physically. But I feel like the Holy Bull wasn't a huge testament of this horse's talent. I feel like he still has more gas in the tank, but he's going to be facing deeper waters soon. He kind of stole it on the front end there, honestly. He set a very, very soft pace and just kind of powered through to the wire. Obviously, I was ecstatic for the Joe Orsino team. Joe Orsino being, you know, a Florida trainer, one of the good guys. His staff has been working for him forever. I'm actually really good friends with the groom of Hades, Angel Perea. We traveled to Kentucky Downs a couple years back. He is such a nice guy, very hardworking. And that whole winner circle, there just wasn't a dry eye. It was personally one of my favorite moments of the year so far. But going back to the horses, the horse who really impressed me coming out of that race was Domestic Product. And he was my paddock pick. He looked excellent. He's a horse with a lot of substance, a lot of depth, but, you know, just very effortless in the way he does everything. His attitude, the way he moves. He's a super intelligent horse. The way he walked into the paddock, you know, did not turn a hair. He was running off a bit of a layoff, walked right up to the gate. Tyler Gaffleone riding him on the buckle. He had his ears pricked, focused as can be, and just radiating this confidence. But an outstanding horse physically, beautiful mover, kind of reminds me of his sire a little bit. He was my paddock pick, and I do believe that horse had a rough trip because he got caught behind a very, very slow pace and still rallied from wide to finish second. It's very difficult to rally from off the pace at Gulfstream in general, let alone mile and a 16th first finish line. That's kind of one of the most speed biased races you could have ever, like, period, in the world. So Domestic Product is a horse who gained a lot of respect from me. Fierceness, I do believe he had a horrible trip. You know, he got slammed, had to go wide in the first turn, all these things. However, for me, physically, he was not the best of the paddock that day. He hasn't changed much from the juvenile, which for me is kind of a negative. It's still early in the year. Hopefully he can grow and change within the next few months. But I remember with Forte, between the Breeders' Cup juvenile and the first prep race of the Florida Derby, like, immense change. The horse had filled in an inch around everywhere, an absolute tank. As juveniles, you know, the horses still have that scope and, you know, that extension in the walk and the way they carry themselves, but sometimes can be a little lighter framed as they're still young horses. But what is so essential is seeing that change from 2 to 3. You want to see them fill in. You want to see that depth. So Fierceness for me, although he's a horse with a lot of length, he doesn't have a lot of substance or a lot of depth. So hopefully we see him change, but I was most impressed by Domestic Product. And the Sam Davis today, Jose D'Angelo, so impressive. That to me was a more impressive race. I just feel like they went way faster. Horse took pressure all the way around. I thought Agate Road ran really well. It's kind of nice to see that horse be able to handle the main track. He rallied from way off of it. So I feel like the Sam Davis was a better race. It was a big field of horses. The Holy Bull came up really soft, I feel like, because people were scared to run against Fierceness. But that's what I think of the Florida prep so far. But all over the country, the Risen Star looks to be extremely stacked this weekend.
Oh, I can't wait. I've got a bunch of works. I have to go through Nash's works that we saw this morning. And Track Phantom works tomorrow on Sunday. I'm really looking forward to that because that's my backyard here. I'm in New Orleans for the whole winter. And the one thing I wanted to follow up on with you is with Fierceness, it seems like when he gets his trip, he's tough. But when he doesn't get his trip, he doesn't handle that well. What about his mental makeup? You know, he's not a real big horse to begin with, but what about his mental makeup? What did you notice about his mental makeup going out onto the track and then warming up?
Honestly, he's a very relaxed horse. Like, nothing bothers him. Apparently in the mornings, he's one of the easiest horses to ride in the barn. Very kind, doesn't ever get excited about anything. But I do feel like based on his running patterns, maybe lacks a bit of courage. You know, you can't always buy heart. You can't train heart. It's just something horses have. And I do believe when Fierceness gets things his way, he has a very high cruising speed and, you know, goes through it. But when it comes to the actual test, he kind of tends to shy away a little bit.
This is probably most likely before you were born, but there was a horse named Ruhlman that Charlie Whittingham had. He originally was a Frankel, came over. I'm that old. I remember when Frankel brought him over as a 3-year-old, actually as a 2-year-old from Europe off one start. He ran 134 flat on the main at Hollywood Park around one turn. Hollywood Park's place you grew up, I got to guess, you know, your dad being out in California. And he was a phenomenal speed horse. But he was the kind of speed horse that you could go 45 with him and he'd finish in one way. You go 50 with him, he would still finish most likely not as well as he did if he went 45. Is Fierceness one of those horses that's got to be allowed to let roll and then let him just run everything into the ground and then kick on? Because I can't see him being able to go 48 under a hold. And then moving on. People think horses are like cars. You just step on the gas and you go, and they're not.
No, he's definitely more of a high cruising speed. You know, doesn't really have a kick, but he's a true dirt horse. But I think we have to give him a little bit of an excuse because he lost a little bit of action getting kind of slammed and carried out wide into the first turn. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of an excuse. But the main thing for me is physically did not change from the juvenile to now, and that worries me for him.
No, you train your horses, and this is a general comment, but when you're going to take a horse that's coming off a 2-month, 3-month layoff and you're going to run him in a greatest stakes race, you as a trainer have to really hone in on that horse. You've got to push him to do things, and that sometimes can backfire on you, can it?
Yeah, sure can. But if anybody can do it, it's Todd Pletcher.
He's amazing.
You know what I mean? I don't think it had anything to do with Todd Pletcher's training. I simply believe that the horse did not change physically from 2 to 3. And that's kind of, you know, out of your hands. Sometimes you get horses. That's why you see horses run in the juvenile and then you never see them again because they're precocious for that time. And then they don't change. I mean, even when my dad had 2 horses on the Derby Trail in 2020, I do believe if Soleil Volante would have competed in the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May, he would have been a lot more competitive than he was when he ran it at the end of September. Because by the end of September, all the other horses changed and Soleil did not. So it's
whoever decided that the Kentucky Derby was going to be on the first Saturday in May was an absolute genius, because you get the 2-year-olds that are starting to decline because and the 3-year-olds that are late blooming start to come up at that same level. It's almost they meet right around that time. I'd say really around March, the 2 good 3-year-olds that are improving they start moving up. And it's really interesting that you bring that up, because over the years we've always seen horses in January and February dominate, but it comes March and April, they can't compete. So Sole Volante won three of his first four, didn't he?
He sure did. He won the Sam Davis. He finished second in the Tampa Bay Derby. But like I said, COVID hit that year. We also had Etienne, who won the Fountain of Youth. And unfortunately, he hurt himself over the summer. But if he would have run first Saturday of May, I think he would have been better off than having to train through the summer. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. But that's just kind of a first-hand example of, you know, how much these horses change in such a short period of time. For me right now, the best horses are the horses running in the Risen Star this weekend. That is just like, I feel very fortunate because FanDuel this year, we were able to partner with Churchill Downs and we were able to cover Churchill Downs racing for the first time in several years. And I feel like I got to see a lot of these horses early on in their debuts at Churchill Downs. So it's been really fun to establish that kind of connection with them, see them go on and, you know, this weekend, see who comes out victorious.
You know, it's interesting. My partners fell in love with you because we had a first-time starter, a four-year-old, starting in November at Churchill named Officer Quigley. And one of my partners called me and he's like, Bruno, you know, Andy loves our horse. And I said, you know, I know what kind of animal he is. You know, my bingo card said he starts before he turns six, you know, so anything before five, you know, between that, I was happy with. He was a big, heavy, he was a serial killer, a serial mangler of grooms as a two-year-old. I'm sure you've had those in the barn. And you just don't know what to do with them. And you just say, just wait on them. And then they roll under a fence and then they do this and do that. It's not that anything major, but they loved you. They were like, oh my God, I'm going to bet on him. I said, what? You weren't going to listen to me. You're going to listen to Andy, but you don't listen to me. You know, great. Thank you.
But I remember Officer Quigley. He was big. I liked his enthusiasm. Who is he? He's by Vancouver, is he?
It's Vancouver, yes.
Vancouver, yeah. He looks kind of like a Vancouver.
Heavy type. That was awesome. Yeah, and he came back to win again, and you got to space the races on him. So he's two for two. But it's really fun when somebody listens to you and you like a horse and the excitement that they brings it out. Now, aww. I want to ask you.
He made my day so sweet.
I want to ask you, when you're in the paddock and you're looking at horses, do you make up your mind when you're watching them in their stall or when they're even just walking around, or do you wait till they get out into the post parade?
It's kind of like a machine gun fire process of elimination. Sometimes I see a horse walk in the paddock, I cross them out immediately, and then, you know, I cross out, and I'm usually left with, like, at least three between – sometimes it's more. Sometimes in bigger races, it's, like, six. And then I start nitpicking from there. And obviously, it depends on the kind of race. It depends if I've seen horses before. If not, if it's a claiming race, I kind of look at different things than a stake race. But you know, general things. It sometimes gets really nitty gritty. It comes down sometimes to feet. I'm a stickler about feet, which I think is part of the reason why I do super well at Keeneland, particularly. One, it's a huge paddock and you see the horses in multiple different angles and you have forever to look at them because they're always walking around and you see them in a bunch of different angles and it's a rubber mat. So you get a really good view of their feet. But
now, when you say feet, I know exactly what you're talking about when you say feet. When you're talking about their feet, are you looking about their size or the way their feet are groomed?
The way they're shod. So, you know, some horses have no wall, really shelly feet, and they've got, you know, glue-ons that could affect the horse. Like if there's an off track or I look at the angles, I don't, you know, if the horse is a bit compacted in the heels or if they're hitting behind or if they're, you know, little things like that.
And then, you know, there's other things I look at, just condition, overall health, like the shine, the dapples, the, you know, I give a horse a little bit of slack if they're just clipped, but, you know, usually if your horse is really healthy, even if you clip them, they should still be shiny. And obviously conformation, but I don't really knock, you know, if I go to a sale and I look at horses, conformation is essential. You don't want horses who are back of the knee, crooked behind, toed in, toed out, whatever. But it does come into play a little bit. Like if I see a horse who's a bit hawky, a little stifly, I don't like that. A little bit of knee action. Maybe when it comes down to the nitty gritty, these are the things when I'm really torn between horses, it will come down to little things like that. Testicles, especially on young horses. But a lot
or
of
lack
it is,
of, or lack of.
Lack of is better than screwed up. Screwed up testicles, yeah. Like whole intact ones. But you know, and just also enthusiasm, you know, scope, the way a horse walks, there should be, it should be like the highest point on their body is being lifted by a string, and the effectiveness in which they walk, the way they push from behind, the extension in the front end, and the confidence and attitude. You know, you can read horses. Some of them walk in there and they're like, I own this place. Even if they were the other day, it was crazy. I got super lucky at Gulfstream yesterday in the first race, or maybe it was it was a maiden, but Steve Dwoskin had a 23-1 winner. And I saw the filly walk in the paddock. Now she was it was a maiden optional claiming race. Okay. So these aren't world beaters. She wasn't the shiniest. She wasn't the flashiest. She was a $1,000 purchase, and for that was getting no respect, especially as a first-time starter. But she came from a precocious dam side. She had four first-time out winner siblings. She had a couple of sharp works, and she looked like she had her game face on. She walked in there like, yeah, that's right. I cost $1,000. Like, you could just tell the way she was walking, and she was effective in the way she walked. And as soon as I saw her gallop in the warm-up, I said, oh, send it. I'm picking this one.
That's a great call. And to be honest, there's a lot of times when I myself watch a horse coming into the paddock, or I watch a horse train, even a million-dollar horse train, and I almost find myself going, that's it? That's all you got? You know, and a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people get stuck on that auction price. You know, it's funny. You brought up the Risen Star. Trek Phantom, I absolutely love. I loved him after his maiden win, and I've watched him improve. I can't wait to see his work tomorrow. But Trek Phantom is a horse that was bought for $500,000. But just because he's got a stablemate and Hall of Fame that's a million-dollar horse, everybody started looking at Trek Phantom as the runt of the family. And Sometimes, looking at that auction price, as soon as they step on the track and have their first work, that's out the window, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can depend on so many factors. Right now, Hall of Fame physically is an outstanding horse. Oh, my gosh. It's no wonder he costs a house and a half, or he costs a really big house in a nice area. He is physically unmatched. But that horse has not really mentally been tested yet. I remember first time out at Churchill, I was like, holy crap, this is a monster. But he was very green that day. He was jumping around next to the pony. He wasn't acting like, I'm going to win right now. Like, he didn't know what was going on. Then next time out at Fairgrounds, the gears, you know, everything clicked, and he was very impressive. But then again, he kind of got an uncontended lead and just kicked on, put his physical abilities to the test. But now he's going to go into deeper waters. If he gets pressure, he gets kickback. There's a lot of things that horses have to go through in a race, and they have to have the mental aspect. They have to be brave. They have to want it more than anything. And trust me, like, horses know what they're doing. And some of them love their job. Some of them will go through the fire for you, and they live for it. And
some of them come with their little lunch pail with the work. You know, they bring their little lunch pail, you know, just like they're working in a factory. They're ready to go about and do their business. And sometimes trying to figure out who those horses are, that's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what would a podcast with me be if I didn't bring up my child, Diamond Oops?
Oh, that, yeah.
Sorry. That horse has just taught me more life lessons. Like, I've gotten so much life experience in the 4 years that I've worked with him. He has taught me so much. But
I was when you said that, I was actually thinking about him because he won on turf, dirt, sprint, route, one turn, two turns. He's amazing. He's an amazing horse.
God, he is a once in a lifetime horse. And just the thing that really blows me away about him is he had a career ending injury at the end of his 2-year-old season. Completely obliterated his digital superflexor tendon just because he was the track was wet fast. He loves the puddles, by the way. And he played a little too hard while he was galloping, and he's obviously a very big, heavy horse and just took a bad step. Blew his digital superflexor tendon. Vets said probability of him seeing a racetrack again was slim to none. Nonetheless, my dad, Ken Hoy, Kieran Dunn, spent a lot of time rehabbing him, brought him back, and that horse made close to $2 million. And although I give my dad and the partners a lot of credit for rehabbing him and bringing him back, the only reason why that horse made it back to the races is because of his own will. It's because he wants it that bad. He loves his job. He loves being a racehorse. He lives for it. He breeds it. He's 9 years old, and he'd still do it if he could. Like, he would take a bullet for you, and you know he's always going to try. And that's purely because he loves his job. And even if you watch him, you see him, you see his attitude. Like, that's the attitude he has. And it's the same for picking horses in the paddock. You can see who really wants to be there, who understands the assignment, who understands their job, who's feeling excellent that day. They talk to you. You just have to pay attention.
Diamond Hoops is the horse we're talking about that Patrick Biancone and Andy trained. Phenomenal racehorse. If you get a chance to go to Equibase or go to the videos and replays, go take a look at him. I believe he was a winner at 2 years of age before he got hurt, correct?
Yeah, he won, broke his maiden. I'll never forget the day he broke his maiden. I was with him in the receiving barn, had to hose him off 4 times because he was on 5 legs, if you know what I mean. And he still won.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he went on to win the Kissa Native Stakes, I believe, on Summit of Speed Day. He ran the Saratoga Special, but that was no good. He dropped Luis Saez in the mornings. He's just, that horse is, he's so funny. But anyways, we had Derby hopes for him. He won 2 stakes as a 2-year-old in Florida, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Now, taking a step back, what is your feelings on a horse like Track Fandom, who's won 3 in a row right now going into the Racing Star?
It's all about, you know, how he keeps progressing. I believe he's been very impressive so far. Set fast fractions, you know, not in his most recent race, but in the previous race, set really fast fractions.
Yeah, he went 46 and change. I bet him that day. I loved him that day. And he goes 46 and change. And I'm watching going, horses don't do that at fairgrounds. And when he kicked on again, I went, wow. You know, they don't do that. They say they don't. You know, but
yeah, and then
I want to go back.
That was the Gunrunner Stakes, right? And then the LeConte, I mean, it was just as impressive. They went a little bit slower. But I thought, you know, I think this horse is really coming into his best form right now. And it's gonna.
Change $500,000. You know. I mean, if you look at him, he's beautiful. He's very well put together. I was so impressed with him, and I don't bet futures, Andy. I went and played him in the futures. I got 18-1 on him. You know, just I was that impressed.
He's just classy. He just does everything right, and you know, just can't fault him in any way. It's all going to be about how he progresses, but he does strike me as a type of horse who understands what he's doing, knows his job, and loves his job thus far. So, you know, sometimes
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no, you're
I'm
totally
getting way
fine.
Ahead of myself.
Sometimes, especially with these young horses, they're good, they're fine when they win with ease, and as soon as they have to reach that runner's high, that real threshold of pain where they have to kind of dig into themselves, you know, some horses reach that point and they don't want ever to feel that runner's high ever again. It's like people when we, you know, runners, some people live to be in that runner's high. They run 10 miles and can't get enough. And then other people run 10 miles and are like, I never want to do that again. And horses are kind of the same way. The really good ones, they feel that fire and they get better. They keep going. And then some feel it and they say, no more, none of that. So I don't really believe he's been truly tested to his full capabilities. So it's hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens this weekend. I think that's going to be the real test for him.
I went through and tried to define class. And this is how I came up to define class. And I wanted to throw it out you and let you soak it in and think about it. Class is a horse that can maintain his rate of speed, maintain his own stride integrity over a long distance of ground.
I believe that I think that definitely has a lot to do with class. I think that's a lot as well, but the way they act,
the way they carry
themselves, you know, like a horse with a lot of class who's a first-time starter, you bring them to the paddock first time and they already know what's going on and what their job is and what they're going to do. You bring a good horse.
You can see it on the right, can you?
Yeah, you bring
see
them
it
in
the right, can you? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, and they understand, you know, they show up and they know what's going on. They carry themselves with that integrity and that class. Like even galloping horses, you know, sometimes the classy ones are a lot more fun to ride than the unclassy ones.
Yeah.
You know, and every horse is an individual, but I do believe class is the way like they carry themselves. At least that's how I view class, more so than an ability thing.
What's interesting is to watch these horses, and you'll see a horse that has a lot of class. He knows a lot of things, but it does everything right. As soon as you torque them enough, that all of a sudden you start seeing the ears pop back, they're flipping leads. You know you've reached their limit.
Sure, you know, absolutely.
From outside looking in. Now, when you're riding them, you're going, oh, wait a minute. He got a little ratty on me here when he got some pressure on. That's something I'll never experience on the back of a horse, because no horse would ever want me on his back, period. but watching them, you know, you can and I'll tell you, I go back another 30 years ago. There was a horse named Rahi. You probably remember him. I've seen him as a stallion. Rahi,
yes,
R-A-H-Y.
Yes. My favorite filly of all time that I've ridden, she was out of a Rahi mare. Just saying. Okay, continue.
So,
sorry.
He was a horse that came over from Europe for Neil Drysdale. Neil Drysdale broke his maiden up at Golden Gate. I think he came over here as a winner, went to Golden Gate and put him on the dirt, and he won by 4. So then he brought him back down to Santa Anita. And he ran him, and what right now is the Goodwood, I believe. It was an Oak Tree, Santa Anita, like 1989, 1990, something like that. He beats a Jerry Fanning horse in just an impressive fashion. Right, he wasn't very big, but he had a lot of heart, he had a lot of scope to him, and he could really run. Well, he comes back in the next stakes race, and down the stretch, he does the pop-up and flip leads in mid-stretch and gets beat by the same Jerry Fanning horse that he had beat prior. When you're watching races and you see something like that, that's what right away, when a horse does something that's out of the norm, that you, at least what I do is I try to get a baseline on a horse. Right away, I knew something happened to Rahi. Well, he ended up tearing suspensories. He was done, and he went to a stud career. That was an excellent stud career. But do you get a base on a horse from when you see him for the first time? You get an idea. You have a foundation on the horse. Do you compare that next time when that horse shows up in front of you?
Absolutely. One thing, I'm not good at a lot of things, but I have to give myself a little credit. One thing, for some reason, I have a really good memory for horses. If I see a horse one time, like I'll remember what it looks like from one time to another time. I can just recall it in my brain. Don't ask me to. People, not so much. People, not so much. Oh, but yeah. Horses.
Welcome to horses. Yeah. Like, yeah, we're in the same club. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
That's why we call people dude. Hey, dude. You know, it works.
Yeah.
You know,
but horses. Yeah. Horses. You know, especially with lower level horses that you see all the time, you can definitely see when they're feeling their best. Like, oh, this horse, and horses change from week to week. It doesn't, and it could be regardless of what the connections are doing. Horses just can suddenly come into form out of nowhere. Just they suddenly do really well. But you know, with lower level horses, you see, oh, this horse is doing so much better than he was 2 weeks ago. Like their coat is better, energy is better, carrying their weight better, just in better condition, in better health overall. Or even, yeah, I like, you know, stake horses, same thing. You can see when horses are looking their best, like Coppola today for Dale Romans winning the sprint stakes. That was the best he's ever looked. I've seen him plenty of times.
He did. I picked up my head when I saw him. I went, whoa, who's that?
You know? And so did Joe Orsino's horse, Eamon, who finished third. I've never seen that horse glow so much as he did today. And then, you know, seeing horses develop and change, like being able to recall Fierceness from the juvenile. He did not, I remember seeing him train in the mornings at Santa Anita, and there was very little change and development physically from him from then to now.
Before I let you go, and again, I thank you so much for joining us, and your knowledge it's a lot of fun to talk to you, because I can actually picture you with a smile on your face, you know, talking the way you do. And that's really brings people to love this game. That passion really rattles people to get into the game more. I want to tell you that if you guys, anybody out there, and you too, Andy, you can go to KentuckyBred.org. And scroll down to the bottom, and you can see all the works that we put together on our video database. It's right there on that site. It's free. I'm going to try to get as many of those horses that tomorrow are working. I think Nash worked today. That'll be up there. Timberlake worked today. I already put it up on the site. Those horses will be up on the site for you to go see. All you have to do is just put in the horse's name. You can put a trainer, and it'll pull up all your video works. KentuckyBred.org has been a fantastic supporter of what we're doing with these video works from Kentucky at Keeneland and Churchill. And so any of those horses that you want to go see, you can go see them there. But and Andy, are you going to be at Ridge of Star this weekend?
I will not. I will be here in Florida, but I will be at the Rebel.
Oh, wow. Okay. Timberlake is heading to the Rebel. Timberlake, of course, is a good two-year-old, the Cox that was at stakes place at Saratoga. He's coming in. He's coming back really, really nice. He's a big, heavy, typical Brad Cox, big, heavy type horse. And one final question leading into that. Now, when you watching all these horses, can you just watch a horse walk into the barn and into the paddock and know exactly who that barn is just by looking at the horse?
Yes, some trainers really do put a stamp on their horses. I would say Steve Asmussen, especially Safi Joseph, especially even Jose D'Angelo's. I mean, just even disregarding the equipment, just like the way the horses are conditioned, you can kind of just tell. And Pletcher too, Todd obviously.
Todd Pletcher's horses just have that look. Asmussen too. Steve Asmussen, when they come in, you know it's a Steve Asmussen horse.
Yeah, just and they look. Even the lower level ones look good, and I always, sometimes I fall into the trap,
because
they just look physically well taken care of and good, and then it's like, oh, this one, paddock pick, and it's like, you know, oh, it doesn't run good. Dang it. You know.
Yeah. Well, we all do that. I mean, I remember I looked when I first met Steve, I was so tongue-tied when I met him. And he's like, Bruno, come on, get in the car. We're going to go down to the track. I remember looking at him like, who, me? You know, I was so, because I just have seen his horses for so long, and I just respected the way they looked. People want to say whatever they want to say. I don't give a hoot. I don't give a shit what people say. All I care is about how that horse looks. And now you can tell a barn a mile away that takes care of good horses. And your father is one of them. Your horses always look fantastic.
Aw, thank you so much, Bruno. Yeah, you're right, though. It's crazy how certain horses, certain barns, you know, just really, really the care that is poured into these horses is insane. And it's just the best.
Get more from Bruno by going to racingwithbruno.com.